This week's parasha we learn about teeth, the blessing of teeth. Now maybe I'll start with a little different agada. That how many teeth do you have in your mouth? That we have a dentist over here. I have to ask
32
you.
32 is the maximum.
32 is the max. He says 32 is the max. Now let me ask you a question. There is a lot of written about this, about the number 33. Did you ever hear of such a thing? I'm asking our resident dentist. Thank you very much for the coffee. Did you ever hear of such a thing that a Jew, there's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew as to the number of teeth, that a Jew has 33 teeth or...
Not so.
Never heard it. Did you ever hear of it?
I did it for 50 years. I never saw 33 teeth in a Jew.
You never saw it? How many years?
50 years.
50, woo! 50 years. Never saw a mouth that had 33 teeth. Never. Okay, that's quite a statement. Okay. But I don't know.
Well, what happens if you're a convert? You grow an extra tooth? I mean,
okay, 32 teeth. What is the significance of number 32? Is lave, is heart. Okay. Now, we have some free medical advice now. Is there any correlation between the health of your teeth and your heart?
Have infections in the mouth or any place in the body.
Okay, no, I want to know something specific, something more specific. I heard about this. Is there any truth to this? Is that gum disease is a correlation, a direct correlation of gum disease to your heart, to a heart condition?
If the gums are infected,
yes.
Yes.
We're listening over here to the dentist.
What? Danger to every part of
so
the
he's saying no, infection. There's nothing special. He's saying there's no, in your experience, 50 years, everybody says 50 years of experience, Dr. Biedenstock is telling us that there is nothing unique. There's an infection, any part of the body that can affect the heart. But there's nothing unique to the gums that is directly connected to the heart. Okay, that's an important statement. Dr. Phil, do you have anything to say, Dr. Phil?
Who have abnormal hearts, let's say they have congenital heart disease, they have abnormal valves. When they get a tooth extracted, they have to take prophylactic antibiotics to prevent the germs from the blood, from the extraction, landing in the heart.
But that could be true if theoretically speaking,
for any operation.
Any operation. Is that true?
Yes, certain procedures, like if you get a colonoscopy or you get your urinary tract examined with a cystoscopy, those people also take antibiotics. But I've seen cases of subacute bacterial endocarditis from multiple extractions at one time in people who didn't take antibiotics.
Well, that's just more common and more relevant because people have extractions regularly. But every dangerous procedure of a surgery where there's a heart condition requires, or it could release bacteria which could cause heart or damage to the rest of the body or the heart.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh
Bedvaroy. But an ordinary person having...
All right, that's one. Lay there. One thing, curious thing about teeth is there are 32 teeth. How many strings of tzitzis do you have dangling on the four corners of your garment? Well, they're really... You have really four strings, 16. They're really 16 strings, 16 independent strings dangling down the side of your garment. But those 16 strings turn into how many? 32. There are 32 strings dangling down the sides of your garment. So in the world of machshava, okay, there is a correlation between, believe it or not, your tzitzis and your teeth. And I'll give you an example. There is such a principle. There's such a I don't know what this is all about. I don't do this. I never saw anyone do this. But by Kiddush Levana, there are some people that look at their tzitzis. By the aura of the Levana, they look at their tzitzis. And then there is this Kabbalistic tradition. I have no clue what this is all about. that a person that suffers from pain in his teeth, tooth pain, should be mispalel at the time of Kiddush Levana for refuah for tooth disease. Do you ever hear
better
this?
Better go to the dentist.
Of course, better go to the dentist. But you need to go, you need Siad the Shemayah to go to the right dentist, and the right dentist should know what to do and should not make any mistakes. This is classic. I'm not making this up. If you go and you study the laws of Kiddush Levana, you're going to find no one has any clue what this is all about. But there is such a tradition that a person that is suffering from tooth disease, obviously go to a dentist. I mean, obviously, unfortunately, people go to many dentists, and they're still searching for a solution to some very delicate. I know my mother had a very big issue. My mother, when she was alive, she had a very, very serious issue with her teeth, and she went to many dentists, and it was very difficult to resolve. You need siyata d'shmaya, and there is such a thing, like any medical condition, you need siyata d'shmaya, besides doing the hishtadlus, and there is such a thing that at Kiddush Levana is an ideal time to be mispalel for relief from tooth pain. What in the world does one thing have to do with the other? Okay, I don't know. I have no idea. And it's not a coincidence is that there are 32 teeth, and there's also an element of looking at your tzitzis at the time of Kiddush Levana, and there are 32 tzitzis and the 32 teeth. And there's some hold that when you cut your tzitzis, you're supposed to cut them with your teeth. You know, that is when you not use a scissor. Don't lesonif alehem barzel. That when you cut the strings for the tzitzis, you cut them with your teeth. Is there some connection between all of this? I have no idea. But the number
that
32.
May have been a relic of 2000
Kabbalistic
years ago, no
hocus pocus.
No
hocus,
dentists.
You say all this is just total nonsense, hocus pocus. Could be. I don't know. These are
opportunities and knowledge and skills and equipment to save teeth. Over yet, the Heintig Zeiten.
How in the world did they survive 1,000 years ago with tooth pain? How did they survive? I can't imagine. Anyone who has the unfortunate experience of tooth pain, I had my wisdom tooth extracted about 2 years ago. Boy, was I in pain. I mean, the pain is excruciating. Like, what in the world did they do 1,000 years ago when you were in that situation?
They tied a person down to a seat. They gave him 6 shots of whiskey. When he was good and drunk, they did what they had to do. Extract.
And that extraction solved the problem? Because when they extract today, they do a lot more than just extract. They disinfect, and they fill, and they do this and do that.
A lot of times,
whatever they can do, they can do.
Because they didn't have
I went to a Revolutionary War encampment.
Yeah.
They had a dentist there. And his tool is basically a pickaxe that's curved. And what they do is they put the whiskey in your mouth, they put a shmata there so that you don't bite your tongue.
Guess what?
Just pull it out.
Guess what? Nothing much has changed. When they did an extraction on me, that's exactly what it looked like. Guy had a wrench.
They didn't know which tooth they were pulling out. They would pull out the wrong teeth also. They'd pull out 2-3 teeth.
I could not tell the difference between the wrench that he was using to pull out my tooth from what my plumber uses to fix the boiler. It looked exactly the same to me. Could not tell the difference.
Well, your tooth is strongly anchored, and you got to pull it.
I thought it was comical what was actually going on here. How they were like really struggling, and there was people that were screaming, and this. It was like, whoo, wow. It's like on television. Someone told me, a doctor told me that this is years ago, it's maybe even 15, 20 years ago, there was a television show where they, I don't know, with they, medical doctors. So this doctor said to me, she's a doctor, and she said, I'm telling you, in a half an hour segment on that television show, there's more action than most doctors see their entire career. Okay, let's now learn something serious. Last day we spoke about toothpaste, glycerin, all of the halachic issues in glycerin and toothpaste and mouthwash, and even lipstick, all lipstick has today glycerin. We spoke about these issues. Let's talk about another issue today about bone grafts. Now, in this safe that we've been using again the second day in a row, this incredible safer called Kesser David by Rabbi Dr. David Katz. He has a very extensive treatment of this subject. I cannot pronounce, not even probably even a fraction of the words that he, all the medical terms and the medical techniques and things that are presented here. I'm not going to break my teeth, pun intended, on trying to tell you what everything it says here. But let's just talk in general terms. Today there are techniques where if a person needs a transplant, he needs
implant.
I'm sorry, implant. See, even that I can't get straight. An implant of a tooth has decayed. Very often, besides the tooth, the bone structure beneath the tooth, where the tooth is anchored, also has seriously been damaged or decayed. So before a dentist can insert an implant, a replacement, he has to first build the foundation. And that foundation means he has to go into the bone that is where the implant will be inserted, and has to reconstruct it.
Bone graft.
Okay, and sometimes it can be very extensive. The amount of work and the restructuring of the bone to create a proper foundation, an anchor, a secure, stable, healthy, and proper anchor foundation for the implant can be very, very complicated. What material do dentists use when they get involved in reconstructing the bone buried deep in the jaw that will be the anchor, will be the foundation for the implant? There are many techniques. According to this book, Dr. Binstock is right in front of me, Baruch Hashem, right in front of my glass screen on the bank over here. And he has extensive knowledge in this matter, so I have to be very careful and not be such a fool person. Has 50 years of experience versus a person that read a few lines in an art school, knows literally zero. So I'd be a mamish, a tippish, to say, open up my mouth, and I speak here with the ultimate derech eretz and kavod and honor to a real doctor that has 50 years of experience. I'll just tell you a quick funny story. You know, my sister and brother-in-law are doctors. They're doctors. They're real doctors. They went to school. You know, did everything. No shortcuts.
Medical doctors.
And many years ago, they took my nephew.
Not my Dr. Jill.
They took my nephew. You know, their child to a doctor, to a pediatrician. And you know, they took him into the waiting room, and they went into you know, a standard visit, and then walks in the doctor. He walks in the doctor, and this kid is about probably 4 years old, 5 years old, walks in the doctor, wearing his white coat, comes in, says hello, and the little boy says to my sister, who's a doctor, and her, says, "Wow, look, a real doctor." A real doctor. You don't get better insults than that, right? A real doctor. So here we have a real doctor, 50 years of experience, but generally there is many, many different, it appears from the way he writes over the years, over the last 50 years, there have been major advances in technology and techniques, and there are many types of materials that have been used and experimented with to serve as a replacement for a person's natural bone, to replace that when that has decayed, has been damaged, and it needs to be repaired, you need to bring into the mouth foreign matter. What will you put into the person's mouth as a replacement for his own bone in preparation for adding, for inserting an implant? So there are many different things. So today, obviously, I'm sure a lot of technology is being directed to synthetic materials, which appears to be no good. It appears to be not very successful. Is that correct? Synthetic materials, just somehow, with all of the technology we have today, it's just not ideal. The ideal thing that has had a very good history of success is taking bones from the dead, from a bone bank. That appears to be very successful. It would appear from what he writes here, the best thing to do would take bone from a person himself, to take bone from your own body, because there will be a much less chance of rejection. Every bone, to a very small degree, or maybe even a large degree, has living cells, living tissue. And it's good to have a living organism in your body. It's much more healthy, I assume, than having something that's purely dead. Problem is, if it's living, it may be rejected by the body because of the complexity of the way Hashem made a person. A person, the body does not want to accept foreign matter. Certainly, if it's living foreign matter, that is a no-no to the body. So taking the best thing, what appears to be, would be to do surgery and to remove bone from another part of the body. From the hip, they take from the hip, and it appears this is very painful, very complicated. A person would have to recover first from the surgery of doing surgery to extract bone from his own body, and then there's another complex process, and then that has to be treated and molded, whatever it's done, in order to use it to reconstruct his jaw to be a foundation to add a tooth. That would be the ideal thing to do, and that appears is done for some people who, for whatever reason, that's the only option. But it's much, much more common not to do that, because obviously it's another surgery, and it's there are other complicated issues. Is to take bones from the dead. And there's a bone bank. I don't know. I'm sure it's very complicated. They must serve certain types of bones, certain types of people. There must be a whole science behind it, and there are probably big companies that are making billions of dollars, providing all different types of bones and different things to be used for this purpose. Why is it a halachic problem? Because a bone is part of a dead body. And in the world of halacha, it is forbidden to use the remains of a human being, even of a non-Jew. A human being is created in the Tzelem Elokim, and to take any part of a dead body and to use it for any purpose whatsoever, even to experiment, do an autopsy, is an immediate challenge to halacha. And specifically, when doing bone grafting, okay, you purchase a bone from a bone bank, a doctor, a dentist will purchase, put in an order for a certain type of bone, whatever it is. Let's discuss some of the basic issues. First of all, there's a prohibition in Shulchan Aruch called Nivul Hames. It's a desecration. It's a Nivul, you are disgracing the dead body by participating in this procedure, by, after a person dies, before burying them, cutting them up into pieces.
Autopsy.
Autopsy is another issue. That's another issue. But before we get, a person dies and he checks off on his chart. He wants to donate his body parts, or his organs, his body parts for other people. It's very, very, sounds like a very noble thing to do. Some rabbanim actually advise that it should be done. Depends who he is. That's a whole different topic. But in the process, okay, this very, this
it's very admirable. Here, people who can't see. Okay,
One thing else. Let's talk about the bones.
There's the heart.
That's a whole different topic. Or organ donations. But what happens? The person dies and comes in a team of people, and they cut them up. Mm-hmm. They cut them up into little pieces, and it's like car parts. After a car sends to a junkyard, and
they harvest the organ,
but it's more than harvesting. When it comes to the bones, they just cut up the body, and they label everything, and everything goes into storage, and everything goes to a different location, and everything's frozen. It's like a junkyard for bodies. A junkyard, the car's life is over. They send to a junkyard, they put into a computer, and they mark down how many doors it has, how many headlights, how many wires, how many this, how many that. Whenever there's a need for a part, they have a massive, massive. You have to go identify to find the car that you need, and the computer tells you how many parts are still left, And every time you need a car, that's what they do. And every time they, in an auto body shop, they need to repair a car, they need certain parts, who do they call? They call junkyards. And the junkyards have on file thousands, tens of thousands of cars lined up in a massive, massive parking lot that are not operational. And they have identified every single make and model and color. And they know exactly what part is there. And then they extract that part and they mark it down on the computer that this car, this part has been removed. So they know the next time around, there are no more headlights. We took them out already. But there's a steering wheel. And there may be an airbag, and there may be a brake light, there may be a pedal, and you just get the parts you need from the exact same make and model. Fine, they do the exact same thing with people. People die, they have organs, and many people want organs for all different reasons. They wanted to study for a high school somewhere in North Carolina wants to go study a human brain. They call up the company.
Every medical dental school.
Exactly. They have whole cadavers. They don't just have, but everyone, they have everything on file. Oh, so this fellow was a very kind, generous person. He donated his body for medical science or for other people. They cut up his bones and they put the bones away for safekeeping. And when a person needs a implant and they need to do reconstruction on his jaw, they will use this bone for the implant. Wait a minute, to go take a body and cut up the body into little pieces and to categorize it and put it away and send it off to different parts of the country for storage, that is called, many people's book, Nivul Hames. That's a disgrace.
It's a problem, but...
In the eyes of the Goyim, it's noble.
Feelingly, it's beautiful. Person dies, he's gone.
Absolutely, right. So that's the dilemma. The dilemma is...
Transplant. So, it's beautiful. A person lives.
Let the goyim do it. There's plenty of goyim to go. Yeah,
right. So even a goy, it's also nivul hames is forbidden even by a non-Jew. Absolutely. Absolutely. Nivul hames is forbidden. Some hold it's a daraisa. A human being is created b'tzelem Elokim in the image of Hashem. Every human being. Okay. We're not going to go through all the little details, but it is a very complicated process called nivul. Now the question is. As Dr. Biedenstock and every person said, well, what are you talking about? Look at the big picture. The big picture is these dead people will live on. They'll live on. They'll live on in someone else's body. That you can study their bodies for the purpose of science, and you can use their body parts. They can for other people can live and be happy and be comfortable. So what is so terrible? You're right. Many places can say exactly that. Let's just first identify the halakhic issue, then we'll find a solution for the halakhic. But let's first identify. First, let us identify what are the potential problems. And you'll be very surprised. Some of the very big poskim, this a lot of these halakhas have come to illustrate that we're very selective in our poskim. You know, we bow down and we worship certain poskim. Oh, Rav Yashiv said this. Rav Yashiv. You know, Rav Yashiv is very machmir on these issues. He holds the eyes, the most common transplant, almost everyone, this is extremely common, cornea. Okay, they take dead people's eyes. He holds it as osa. Oh, Rav Yashiv, people will literally give up their right arm for Rav Yashiv. But Rav Yashiv holds, you're not allowed to take, you're not allowed to have a cornea transplant. Would you believe that? Oh, we don't accept that. He's a Das Yochid. It's very interesting. Like we're very selective and we pick and choose in many areas of halacha. Let's identify.
A person who has kidney disease.
I know, I'm with you.
And he gets a fresh kidney from somebody.
I'm with you.
He's alive instead of dead.
I'm 100% with you. I and the whole world is with you. I just want to point out is that let us first identify the issues. I'm from the biggest Mekilim, don't worry. I'm not coming to make any chomer sefer for you. I just want to, let's just learn some halacha. Some of the, because sometimes it can have practical application, which does affect us in some way, shape or form. Lahagdil toru lahadir, we should just be aware of the issues. Issue number one is there is a very serious prohibition to take a dead body and to be menabel it, to desecrate it. Some people would hold that at the moment, if we're not going to look at the big picture of what's going to happen, you know, the big picture of the satisfaction, the pleasure, the benefit that it will provide to the world, is number one, understanding disease so it should never occur again, and in actually giving people the ability to see and to eat and to live, put that aside. Let's look at the moment. At the moment, we have a body, and we have people coming in literally with chainsaws, and all different tools that are, even on television, you don't see these type of tools. And they cut up the body into all these little pieces, and it's basically like a car in a junkyard and put away in all different parts of the world. They don't show this to you. They don't show you what really goes on behind the scenes. If you would see what goes on behind the scenes, you would be horrified. You would have nightmares your whole life to see how bodies are sliced and diced and sent off into put on a catalog, put on a computer catalog for parts of the body. It's horrific. It's called, in halacha term, nivul hames. And nivul hames is osur. Some hold it's osur. I don't have all the sources. There's a way over my head of all stuff, but some hold that it's osur min ha-Torah. Even for a body of a non-Jew, the body of a non-Jew is created b'tzelem elokim. Okay, that's problem number one. Problem number two. Having hanoa min hames. A mace, it's a Shulchan Aruch, it's a Gemara, it's a Pasuk, I don't remember all the, it's Osur Behana. You're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body. It's like Basa B'chalav. It's like Kutchen. It's Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. What do you want to say? What are you going to argue with that? It's Halacha. You're not allowed to have benefit. You need a new tooth. You need a new tooth, so you're going to go and you're going to have Hana from a dead body. Okay? And let's identify the problems. At the end of the day, don't worry. Everything is mutter at the end of the day. But let's identify the issues. It's osur behana to derive benefit from a dead body. Number three, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to bury the dead. Cutting up a dead body, forget about the nivel. Forget about the element of desecrating the dead body. Let's just talk about this bone belongs in the grave, under the ground. It doesn't belong in your mouth. It doesn't belong in someone else's body. There is a mitzvah, the oraisa, there's an obligation of burying a body in the ground. So right off the bat, okay, then number four, less than a minute, is bodies and body parts are tameh, even a body part of a non-Jew. And a kazayis bosom and hames, a kidney is metameh be'oihel. A kidney is mamash metameh, the whole building is tameh. A kohen can walk into the building when there is a kidney in a bag. You have a bag that's frozen, a frozen kidney that they bring in, that a special messenger, okay, a messenger service. They fly on airplanes, special services to bring organs, a heart. Guy comes with a heart. They send the hearts on planes, private charter planes sometimes. It can be such an emergency, so sensitive. The millionaires will go and they'll pay a private jet. Messenger service comes with a bag. What's in the bag? A heart. The guy just died 2 hours ago. And here we have his heart. We're putting into this person. When that person walks into the hospital with the heart, kehanim arois. Because the heart is the kezayis basam and ames. It's metame be'oyel. It's metame by maga, masa. There are... Let's discuss now very briefly the four different types of tumah. There's tumah of touching. There is tumah of carrying, even if you're not in direct contact to carry. There's tumas oihel, which means if it's present, the entire environment is tameh. And then besides, there's tumas also called tumas hesed. Hesed means even if you're not carrying it, but even just to move it, even movement is metame. Okay, there's four different types of tumah. And the laws of tumah are extremely complex. Every body part, bone, basar, skeleton, there are different rules as to which where is metame by touching. Some are only metame, some are not metame by touching. All different sets of rules relating to all different types of tumah, which we'll discuss in a moment, but there are basically four types of tumah. Tumas maga, contact. Tumas masa, to carry, which means you're supporting it. Number three is to move it, even if you're not actually coming in contact with it, just to push it. And number four, tumas oihel. Now let's talk about measurements. What are the measurements? Well, bones, a bone is very severe, because a bone is metame b'se'oira, the size of a barley seed. A barley seed is not that big. A small little bone fragment, the size of a barley seed, is metame, it's an avatum. Then there's a kezayis basar. Okay, a kezayis, an olive of flesh, which is not all that much either. And then there is something called tumas regef. I'm saying it correctly, where bone or the body decomposes into dust. If the body decomposes, or let's say for argument's sake, if a bone is taken and pulverized and made into dust, which is very common, which is done in the dental field, appears that's a very popular technique, is to take pulverized bone fragments and to use that as to reconstruct it with some type of paste, some type of adhesive, which brings it together, and to use that to mold, to create a setting or to reconstruct bone fragment that's been damaged as a foundation for an implant. So that's called tumas regef. When you take a body and the body decomposes into dust. Now the advantage of that is, in order for that to be metame, you need a lot. You need this machloikis rishonim, either a whole fistful or two fistfuls. And that you'll almost never have a problem with. You hold tumas regef. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tumas, for some reason, I don't know why it doesn't sound right to me. The dust of a dead body, you need a large amount. You need a fistful or two fistfuls. And that contaminates be'ohel in an open area. Okay, so now here's the issue. Here are the issues. We have here let's review what we did so far. We mentioned that we have problems. Number one, we have a problem of nivul hames, desecrating a dead body. Number two, we have a problem of meis osur behana. Number three, we have a problem of burial. And then we have the problem of contamination. And contamination is primarily a problem only for kohanim, which means if a dentist is a kohen, you're a kohen? No. If a dentist is a kohen, he has real problems. This is not a joke. This is serious business. A dentist who is a kohen has problems.
Has a problem in dental school, you have to work on a cadaver.
So dental school is temporary. Dental school is, you go to dental school, so you have a shiloh for a couple of days, couple of weeks. You have a shiloh in dental school. Then you get out of dental school, your problems are over. But a dentist who works full-time, specialty, implants, and every single day he's reconstructing people's jaws and remodeling bone structure, and you're dealing with bones of the dead people, this is not a small matter. This is a very serious matter. Why do you have to choose from all the different types of lines of work in the world? Why is this have to be what the type of line of work you want to deal with? Is there a solution for a person that wants to be specialized in bone grafts and is a kohen? I'm sure there are kohanim who are specialists in bone grafting. Has to be. And they have problems and they have halachic dilemmas and there are solutions for them. There are solutions. Not necessarily the ideal solutions, but there are solutions. Very many, many rabbis. By the way, Derech Agav, there are two schools of thought in dealing with these type of questions. Should even something very I didn't read the article yet. I didn't have a chance to read the article, but the cover article of last week's Mishpacha magazine was about. I have no idea what it says. I don't know anything about it. Is the end of Shomer Shabbos residency. It's always a very big issue for a doctor when they went to medical school, when they go for the residency, 4 years of residency, even medical school sometimes, and the fellowships, and then when they become doctors, what about Shabbos? As a resident, you have to work on Shabbos. There's no way out. They tell you when to work.
Try to become a resident or an intern.
So they were
Maimonides.
What's the difference with Maimonides? You have to work on Shabbos. Maimonides also they accommodate you to read. Okay, so they have Shomer Shabbos. So there are all these techniques, but a lot of people will tell you that. First of all, if you really want to get good training, you want to get the best. Doctor has to be the best it can possibly be. The best training, there's no Shomer Shabbos residency. If you want to get the best training, then that's it. You got to work on Shabbos. And if let's say you don't want the best, so then sometimes you have to sacrifice. You have to make arrangements. A Shomer Shabbos residency where people are going to cover for you, where you're going to trade off. And they actually have a very nasty term called sabotaged. Instead of sabotaged, okay, you were sabotaged. They called it shabbatost, where the goyim say, they complain about the firm residents, that the firm residents have shabbatized them. Instead of sabotaged them, which is a nasty word that they've caused us damage. They took advantage that the Shomer Shabbos, and they made us work for them on Shabbos, and they did not reciprocate to the degree that they really should, and they resent it very much. It's a very, very big problem. It's a very big problem, and the laws have been following this every year. There's always, it's in the news. They change this. They change the rules, the laws. I don't know, I didn't have a chance to read the article, but it seems like they wrote on the cover article, the end of Shomer Shabbos residency. Obviously, something happened.
Shabbos medical doctor, an older man told me, a young from medical doctor has to be very careful, because even though it's halachically permitted to go into and learn on Shabbos, once you've been Mechal Shabbos, halachically approved, the few years in the hospital, phone calls and writing and all the other things you have to, your neshama is never the same.
Okay, so this is a very big debate among Gedolei Yisrael. There is no question, this is going on a side topic, there are Gedolei Yisrael that say, if you want to be a doctor, be a doctor. If that's your calling in life, there is nothing to discuss. You be a doctor. Oh, Shabbos? Figure it out. You do what you have to do. You'll figure it out. If you have to be Mechal Shabbos, so Pikuach Nefesh. But the first point is, you have to follow your calling in life. If this is what your neshama tells you you have to be, go for it. Be a doctor. Shabbos? No. A lot of Mechal Shabbos. Pikuach Nefesh. And then there are rabbanim that will say to you without any hesitation, they'll say to you, it's your calling in life, you dialed the wrong number. If this is what you think your calling in life is, then you've dialed the wrong number. Don't go into this field because it's a challenge to your religion. What do you care more about? Hashem, what do you care about? Your profession. No one's really asking the shaila. People do whatever they want to do, whatever. They know everyone has a different sensitivity. But I know I know Rabbanim that people went to, and the Rabbanim told them exactly this. If this is what you're calling in life, big gedolim, you be a doctor. That's what you have to do. Big people, you be a doctor. And Shabbos, you're allowed to. That's the halacha. You're in a situation, and other gedolim would say, it's not for a Jewish boy. It's not for you. You have to understand, you're going to become a doctor. Exactly what you said, you're going to be a doctor, which means there's no Shabbos. Shabbos is Shabbos. Does your neshama have any, do you have any sensitivity to your neshama? Okay, these are chiluk ideas. That's not our shir now. Let's go back to our issues. Nivul hameis, and osam and isabahana, and burial. And then tumah. Four different issues. And tumah is a very complex issue. Let's discuss one at a time. Let's talk about burial. burial. This mitzvah d'oraisa to bury a dead body, even a non-Jew. Many hold even a non-Jew there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to bury. It can lose solidness of loss. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Ki kavor tikberenu. You shall bury the body. Ki kavor tikberenu. And who is that said about? About a person who is chayiv misa, a Russia. A person who is chayiv misa, ki kavor tikberenu. You must bury a dead body, even a non-Jew. How could you participate by taking bones and taking body parts of dead people where these organs and body parts should have been buried? How could this be permitted? So you'll sum a lightweight answer. I didn't do it. The goyim are doing it. They're doing it. So if they're anyway doing it for their own benefit, so I might as well be nene. If we control the world, this is a very schwache answer. This is not a good answer. If we control the world, this was a Jewish world, and we're making the decisions. Okay, then we'll come. We'll ask a shaila. No. This is done by the world. They're anyway not bearing these body parts. That's right. They're in violation. I'm not in violation. They're in violation. I didn't do anything. So I can't be nene just because they're in violation. So now I need this body part. So what's so terrible if I'm not the one who did the Avera. Oh, but you're participating. Okay, but I'm not doing the Avera and there's a very great need. That's a very weak answer. The answer I like the best, there are different controversial answers, is you only have to bury a body part if it's dead. By taking that body part and putting it into your body, you're bringing it back to life. It's techiyas hameisim. If the goal, it never really died. If there's potential for this body part to remain alive in someone else's body, it didn't die. If a person dies, and there's a heart, and the heart can be reused. So it's alive. The heart is alive. So it's not dead. You only have to bury things that are dead. It's living. Or you can say, don't worry, the heart will be buried eventually when the recipient dies. just a delay. Now and this is a very important principle, it's the first Shulchan Aruch, that if it's a, we know there's a principle that the person should be buried ASAP. Kabbalah, Kabbalistic principle. Bury a person immediately. No one knows what this means, but that's the halach principle. And there's even the Shulchan Aruch on Yom Tov. You're allowed to bury on the first day Yom Tov through Jews, and the second day Yom Tov, and the first day Yom Tov through Goyim, and the second day Yom Tov through Jews. There's a principle in halacha to bury a body as soon as possible. However, when it will result in kovod hames to delay the burial, it is permitted, and is lechatchila permitted to delay the burial. For example, a chacham, a Talmud chacham, in order to give him a proper eulogy, we need to delay the funeral in order to allow everyone to come and arrive for logistic purposes. We can't do the levaya now. We want to wait until after Shabbos. And Rybelski passed away. He passed away Thursday night. And they had the levaya Friday morning. And there were a lot of people that were very upset. There were a lot of gedolim that said, no, make the levaya on Sunday. Wait, make the Levaya on Sunday. Push off Friday night, Shabbos. The Levaya will first be Sunday morning. That's a long time to wait for a very holy person like Rybelski, because you'll be able then to give him the funeral that he deserves. They didn't do that. The family didn't want. They had the Levaya Friday morning, which severely, severely limited the attendance. Because it was a short Friday, and you can't bus in 10,000 people to the Levaya. If the Levaya would have been on Sunday, they would have had a Levaya, at least 10,000 people would have come to the Levaya in Tara V'das. But the family did, I don't know all the details, but the family didn't want, so how many people came to the Levaya? Less than 1,000 Friday morning? Because on a Friday in the winter, you can't have a Levaya. It doesn't work like that. Okay, it doesn't go like that. So it was severely limited.
Eventually went third throw.
Mitzvah Shabbos. He went Mitzvah Shabbos.
It would delay it even more.
Well, it would have been delayed. It would have been delayed even more if they would have had the Levaya on Sunday. So then they would have went to Eretz Yisrael Sunday afternoon or Sunday night. So it would have been delayed even more. That's right. But I even know the Gadol who said it was very upset. He said it openly. The Levaya should be on Sunday. It's right. Delay. That's right. Delay. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch it says to delay the Levaya when the delay will result in a greater Kavod Shemayim. And that's right. This way, let all of the yeshivas in New York, let them bust in all the kids. Let them bust them in. They'll sit outside. They won't understand one word. But that's right. They should know what it means to come to a Levaya of a Gadol Hadar. That they should know what it means. That's right. That's what's supposed to be done. They didn't do it. They did it. It was a big Levaya, but it wasn't like what it could have been. Because you're allowed to. It's the same exact thing with burying the dead. Because when these people die, it's a much greater honor for the dead that their organs and their bones can live on in another human being. It's an honor for them. It's a kavod for them that their heart is living on in someone else's body, or their bones are going to live on, their bones are going to be used to give a person the benefit of having pleasure eating on his own. There's no greater benefit in this world. You give someone to eat, you let a person eat on his own, he can choose food. It's a kavod for the mace not to be buried. Okay, that's a very powerful svara. So either the body didn't die, it's living on. It's living more. Or it's an honor for them. Or the first answer we gave was, I didn't do it, don't blame me. I'm not the one who didn't bury the body, the goyim. That's a shvach answer. And the other answer, there's one more answer, which is more of a technical answer. Not everyone agrees to this. This is a very big disagreement in the Rishayim. If you bury the majority of the body, are you obligated to bury the minority? In other words, let's say theoretically they buried the whole body, 90% of the body, and the only thing they extracted was the heart, the eyes, some bone fragments, some bone sections. The majority of the body has been buried. The mitzvah d'oraisa of ki kavar tik berenu has been fulfilled. Then there is no obligation to bury the minority. So if we can assume, which is very common in many cases, they don't take every single body. When they take organs, they bury the skeleton, they bury the majority of the body most of the time. They don't cut up every single body into little pieces and send it away. So if the majority of the body has been buried and they're only dealing with a minority of the body, then there's no violation in halacha. So we've given over here, I think, four answers to avoid the problem of burial. We didn't do it, they're doing it, so don't bother me with the question. Number two, the body didn't die. It's going to live on. It's alive. You only bury the dead. You don't bury the living. It's going to live on in someone else. Number three, it's a kavod not to be buried in this instance. And number four, if you bury most of the body, then there's no violation if you do not bury other parts of the body. Now, what about nivul hames? If you would see what goes on behind the scenes, you would be nauseated. You would say, wow, that's called nivul hames. There's a very simple answer. Many Rishonim learn, nivul hames only when your kavana is to desecrate the body. You can do the same exact act. If your kavana is to desecrate, this person, cut them up into little pieces. That's nivul hames. But if your kavana is, no, I need to cut the body into pieces for medical purposes, that's not nivul hames. Nivul hames depends upon your intent. It doesn't depend on a physical action. Okay, that's a very basic principle, which takes away the question. And then you can also say it's not cool. That's really the answer. Okay, everything that you're going to try to suggest really fits into that category. Nivul hames depends upon intent. I'm not desecrating the body. I'm elevating the body for higher purposes. What about, now this is a very big problem. mace also behana. That's a problem. That's not such a simple solution to get out of. The issue of mace, the mace is also behana. And part of the solution is, one of the basic answers is, only time you say meis osa b'hana is derech hana osa. If this is the way you ordinarily have pleasure. Now, I don't know what that means exactly. I don't know exactly what is called derech hana osa of a dead body. What, to eat it? To eat it, is that what it means? People, cannibals? I guess so. I guess in certain societies in the world in ancient times, what do you do with a dead body? You eat it. The basar is for dinner, and the skin becomes the rug. It's time now for a new mat, a floor mat. So there he is, dad, grandpa is now going to become the new floor mat that you wipe your boots on when you come into the house. That was the typical attitude among these pagans. That's called derech hana osai. Basar you eat. Leather you make into a knapsack. You make into some type of bear canteen. And you do what the same thing you would do to an animal is what you would do to a human being. That's called derech hana osai. To take organs and to put them into other bodies and to take bone fragments and to, you know, and to make out of them and bone fragments and to use them for implants, bone grafts, that is not called derech hana osa in any sense of the word. You're going to say, but this is what we do today. So what? That's not what it means in the Gemara. Derech hana osa means what you do to an animal. And therefore, that question has conveniently fallen to the side as well. So we already have three things we knocked out. Three different issues. We've knocked out, it's not kederech. That's the main answer, derech hana osa. Okay, now, tuma is a problem. Tuma indeed is a real problem. How do we deal with tuma? So in dealing with organs, I mean, a heart, a kidney, is a kazayis, basim, and hanes. It's takam, matam, boil. It is. There's nothing to do. I mean, while they transport it, and while they're doing surgery, if the surgeon is a Kohen, and if you're in the hospital when they're doing a kidney transplant or heart, you're right, you got to get out of the hospital. It's pikuach nefesh for the patient, right? So if the patient is a Kohen, he can be there because it's pikuach nefesh to live without a heart. And if the surgeon is a Kohen, well, it's bikuach nefesh, no less than the Hatzolah member being Mechal Shabbos, it's bikuach nefesh. Now you'll ask the question, okay, that's very good. When the surgery is going, but what happens when the surgery is over? A Kohen is walking around with Kazayis, Bosom, and Hames. So the answer is, first of all, it's not mace. Once it's reactivated, it becomes part of your body, and they're living cells, and the body has accepted it. It's not been rejected by the body. It's alive. It's not dead. It may be considered dead when it's on the table before they in the ice pack before they put it into the body. Maybe then you'll say it's dead. Maybe you'll also say, listen, it's on the way. Soif ma'is b'machshava tchila. It's on the way to a good new home, a good new life. So maybe you'll say it's like, you know, it's alive. I don't. Maybe you can go so far to say that. That's irrelevant. That's totally irrelevant because it doesn't really matter because pikuach nefesh. Okay, this pikuach nefesh doesn't really matter. So, and when it's in the body, it's called tuma belua. There's a many daf gemara on this sugya. Tuma belua. If an animal or a human being has inside his body real dead matter from a dead body that's not serving any function whatsoever, if it's swallowed up, it's completely concealed inside your body, it's not metame. Tuma belua. Tuma that is concealed, even if you want to suggest, which is not really so good, not really necessarily true, that it's dead. You have in your body something that's dead. It's belua. It's concealed inside. That's good by organs. Now what about bone fragments? Teeth. That's this whole topic today. That really is a big problem, because a bone is metame etzem kisoir. Now, there, I don't know anything about dentistry. As I told you, I'm embarrassed here to speak, open my mouth in front of a person who has 50 years of experience, and I just read a few notes in the art school, and I make believe I know something. I know absolutely nothing. But it seems there are many different types of techniques that were done and are done and will be done with harvesting bone from bone banks. Sometimes they use complete bone. Is that correct? They use a whole bone that has not been broken,
pulverized.
And that is a problem. That is a real problem. Some want to say that it's been treated with acid. And the Rambam says that if bone has been burnt in fire, it's no longer metame. And the question is, what does that mean? I mean, what are the parameters? What are the guidelines? Some want to suggest that it's a given. Every time they use bone from a dead body in a human being, the bone has been treated with acid to kill off any bacteria, any living tissues, any living organisms that's still in that bone. The acid has the status of esh. And it's now considered, it has burnt it out. Acid is acid. It has the same properties of fire to a very large degree. And many poskim want to suggest that bone, a full bone fragment, which is more than the size of a barley seed, which is certainly, according to all opinions, a very big problem of tuma. And you know, you can say, is it bikuach nefesh? Not necessarily. Is it bikuach nefesh for a kohen to have this tooth implant? There are other techniques. There are other things that can be done that he can get by. Is it permitted? I mean, obviously, you know, there are many. Every question is unique. Every situation is unique. But part of the equation is halacha. If a person is a yorei shemayim, you care about halacha. You have in your possession bone that is. Metame is a serious source of contamination for a kohen. It's a complete bone. Is there a problem? Now, after they do the transplant, they put into the person's body, he doesn't talk about this. Is that called, after it's in part of your body, is that called tuma balua? Not necessarily. I mean, yes and no. I guess it is, because you can't really see it, right? Because the bone is deep down in the gums. So I guess it's not, I guess after the surgery is over, it is balua. So then there's not a problem. When the surgery is over, most of the time the bone can no longer be seen, and it's concealed underneath the implant and all the other things. So I guess after it's over, even by the bone, it's balua. But what about the surgery? During the surgery, it's maga. An etzem kisoira is touching the body of a kohen. A kohen is not allowed to do that. It is a serious matter. Oh, temporarily? There's no such thing temporarily. You have another, is a pikuach nefesh? Well, some will argue, well, it is. You know, if you can't chew the way you want to chew, that could affect your health at some point in time in your life. These are serious matters. I mean, you know, everything has to be judged. There's no situation that is the same. But let's just deal with it in a conceptual level. The doctor before the actual bone is put into position, is making contact with the patient. He's contaminating him. Is there an alternative method to achieve the same results, even if it costs more money? Is there another solution? Tumas maga. So some will say, well, no. Once the bone has been treated with acid, we trigger the words of the Rambam, who says that a bone that's been nisraf is no longer metame. So this is one issue. Now, it seems when I've read here that it's much more popular not to take actual bone fragments, but one bone from one body, but to take pulverized bone fragments. Now that enters into an entirely new world of halacha, of what we said dust, of body dust. Now that should right away be perfect, because when it comes to body dust. Dust, when it comes to dust, you need enormous measure of dust to be metame. So if the bone indeed has been broken down to powder, real powder, then it would seem there's no shaila, because you need to have two fistfuls of this in order for there to be any source of contamination whatsoever. Problem is, they don't make it into powder. They don't. They make it into small little pieces. Because if you make it into powder, then you might as well use some synthetic material. They have to leave over the size of the bone that it should be significant enough that it is like a bone, because that's the whole reason why you're putting this into the person's mouth, is because you want to replace real bone. You want the body to accept it. You want it to think that it's part of the natural part of the body. If you pulverize into powder, it's gone. And by the way, that goes to show that, derech agav, that when it comes to foods and you make gelatin and you pulverize into powder, goes to show that it's no longer its original what it used to be, and it should be mutter. It's a whole different thing. Because for tumma, because when it comes to laws of tumma, we apply that principle. So why should you not apply that principle when it comes to foods for achila as well? But in any event, the way it appears that's very, very common today is they pulverize it, but not into powder. Into little, teeny, small fragments. And they glue it together, some type of paste, which makes it into something which they can mold and shape and they can insert. But you can look at it, you can see the bone, you can see the little pieces. You look at it, you can see little pieces of bone. And that now becomes a big, big major debate in the poskim. If you take an etzem kisa'ira, a bone the size of a barley seed, which typically you'll reach that shear in a reconstruction in a bone graft, you'll have an etzem kisa'ira, and it's not powder. But it's not one big piece either. If it's one big piece, you have a problem. If it's powder, you don't have a problem. But lucky for us, we're in Goldilocks syndrome situation, nishtahi nishtaher. It's bone fragments. And bone fragments, it's not an etzem kisoira, but it's fragments. What is the halacha? So to this, there's a major machlokes rishonim. Some hold that it doesn't matter. If you have an etzem kisoira of teeny little fragments of bone, no difference. No difference in having a complete bone. Other rishonim say, no. Once you make it, you break it up into little pieces, there's no tumor whatsoever. And then there is what appears to be more accepted halacha l'maisa, a third shita. Could be it's the Chazon Ish, and I don't remember all the details, and that is the very big chiddush. It depends if the bone fragments have come from one person or been combined from two different people. If you have a mass of bone fragments, and not powder, that have come from one corpse, one cadaver, then it's tummy, then it's a problem. But if you take, you have an etzem kisoira, the size of a barley seed, of bone fragments, and half of them have come from Reuven, and the other half came from Shimon, and they've come together to make up this one shiur of etzem kisoira, it's not metame. If you want to take bone fragments and bring them together to be metame as the size of kisoira, it must be from one person, not from two people. So let's now go to the manufacturer. Let's go to the harvester and let's ask them, when you sell us bone fragments for these procedures and all of the dentists, for all the dentists, do you give it to us from one bone? Or is it a big mix? You have a big machine, you throw in all the bones, you cut them up into little teeny pieces, and you mix it all together, and in your mouth, you have like a whole yeshiva. You have 50 people are in your mouth. You have a bone from this guy, this guy, this guy. Don't discriminate. All races, all genders, non-gender specific, male, female, maybe something else. No, black, Caucasian, white, no discrimination. You put from many, many people. Or no, are the things that they're giving you, are they specific to one to one bone? It depends. So according to this book here, there are different companies that supply dentists with bone fragments for reconstruction of the jaw in preparation for implants. Some of them, their technique is to mix bones from many different donors, and some not. Some, each packet that you get is, and he says the main manufacturer is someone outside the United States. I know it's someone outside the United States, the main supplier for dentists, the biggest supplier, global supplier, is a European company, and they, the packet that they deliver usually is from one person. It's from one donor. They don't mix. Like, I guess every procedure comes a certain volume of bone fragments. And when you buy that packet, you purchase the packet to be used for the procedure, usually in the packet is a bone fragments of one person. It's not mixed together from many, many people. There are other suppliers and other, it's a big business, obviously, and their technique involves mixing bone fragments from many different donors. So this would be a very fascinating difference. This is a halachic nafkamina, that if a person who is a Yoreh Shamayim and he's a Kohen, or a dentist who is doing this procedure and doesn't want to come in contact when he does the procedure himself, he, every time when he's doing the procedure, he's touching it. He actually touches it. He touches it with his bare hands sometimes. I mean, I don't know, with gloves.
Gloves.
You wouldn't actually touch it. But even this masa is carrying enough to actually touch it. Masa heset. Okay, there's no tumas oil, but there's din of masa. So what do you do? So obviously, for a person who is a Yoreh Shamayim and is a Kohen, it would definitely be ideal for him to acquire his supply from a supplier that gives bone fragments that have come, that is a mixture, a taruvis, of multiple donors, because according to the Chazon Ish, there's no tumah whatsoever. Others disagree, other holes, doesn't make a difference, but at least you diminish the problem. But to go and to acquire the supply from another company, which is from one person, would be a problem. But then you have to ask the question, well, what's better for the patient? I mean, obviously, there are different reasons why some suppliers mix, some do not mix. Each one obviously has an advantage. Quality, you know, the rejection rate of the body. There are many issues. And you have to take that into consideration when you're dealing with your patients. And who, what also cost? How much will it cost? And he writes over here that there are some dentists who indeed are Kohanim and do deal with this issue. And when they do the work, they have a solution. The solution is they never take, the only time there is contamination is when you're holding in your hand or you're moving at one time a full measure. When they apply the bone fragments to the jaw to reconstruct, they take it a little at a time. They make sure they take pochus mikashir. They don't have to go take the whole etzem kisoira and just jab it into the jaw. They're careful to take a small amount, put it there, another small amount, put it there, another small amount, and then once already it's partially attached, it's already part of it. Then it's more lenient, because once it's attached to the body, it becomes bottled to the body. It's no longer metame when it's part of the body already. And then they can mold it, they can shape it. But when they actually apply it, they don't apply it in one shot. They apply it piece by piece. Or if they do need to apply it in one shot, they let their assistant do it. That's not the chokhmah. The chokhmah is not putting it there. The chokhmah is the shaping. So they tell their assistant, every dentist has multiple assistants, so they say to this, you take, I'm a Kohen, this thing over here is bone fragments, it's metame, I'm not allowed to move it, I want you, my assistant, to take it and to put it in the into that opening, into that cavity, let it settle there for a few moments, and then I'll take over and I'll shape it and mold it and make it perfect. So once already it settles into us, I guess to even a small degree, it's considered to be mechubar, attached to the person's body. And once attached to the person's body, it takes away the severity of it being metame. And now the dentist can finish off the process. So these are our techniques. Obviously, if you're dealing with a case of pikuach nefesh, you're dealing with, then obviously all these things will fall to the side. But at least it's worthy to appreciate the halachic challenges that these things present. Okay, it's very late. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, Rabbi Sai. All the best to everyone.
I find it very hard to think that a gadol in Israel would not allow a person with a heart, and he's dying, or kidneys not working, and he's dying.
Have a good day, folks.
Say you can't have the transplant.
So do I.
Bye.
Obviously, that's not the case. Obviously, the discussion of what they prohibit is discussing something that is not a matter of pikuach nefesh.
Well, it's a matter of inconvenience. You can get a pig bone implanted instead.
Okay, so then you deal with the different. Yeah, listen. When it comes to medical things, you don't play games. Right. You don't play games. You go for the best. It's very rare.
Well, you're allowed to put in a pig bone?
Yeah, of course. Why not? They do. They actually do.
You're not allowed to.
They actually do. They put
You're not allowed to deal with pigs. Are you allowed to sell pigs?
This verse is shaloi kiderech hanaosai. Not dealing with pigs is not even a derabon. It's a takana. It's a minog. It's a minog, I think. These are lightweight matters. Coming to bikuach nefesh, health. All of these things are not.
Pigs are useful. The only animal they use them for heart transplants.
Right.
For valves.
They clone them. They actually they create custom made organs through pigs.
Pig is the only animal that every part of his body is used. Every single part is used. As a big source.
Megadli, Gemara says the people that were Megadli Chazidim, they glowed. They were very wealthy. They were very, very wealthy. Megadli Chazidim. Pig farmers. Pig farmers were very wealthy people. All right, Rabbi Sai, have a wonderful day.
I think today there's a solution. They have 3D printers that will print the outline of the underlying structure, which you can put in.
I don't think they do it yet. That's cutting edge. That's cutting edge stuff. You know they're doing that? They're using that for hip replacement. They're trying to do that. They say it's unbelievable. When they create literally a custom-made bone.
And they don't even make the whole bone. It looks like a fishnet.
And
that the cells can grow and cover.
And the recovery time is almost nothing. They do major, the person walks and he literally cannot walk. He comes out and he can walk almost immediately. And there's no healing there because the precision, the computer scans exactly the shape, bidiyuk, what it needs. And it shoots out of the printer exactly what it needs, custom made. They put it in. It's unbelievable. Today they can't do that. Today they put in these bolts. They put in like generic parts. And then the body has to take months for the body to adjust to like a new pair of shoes. Every time you buy a pair of shoes, you know, it affects your walking.
That's why the bones are really processed beforehand, because otherwise the body would reject it. So they process, kill mama,
the tissue, they burn out the living tissue, so there should not be any rejection.